It's 4 o'clock in Los Angeles. It's 6 o'clock in Dallas, Texas. And it's 7 p.m. in New York City. Hello, everybody. I'm Angelo, the Mad Dog DeCipio. And this is What's the Buzz? America's Best Podcast. I'm joined tonight, as she every week she does this to me, folks. I come on here every night, every Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. I come here to say hi, folks. I love you all. And then I see her face, and I go between laughing and crying. That's what happens. I start out laughing, and I go, oh, no.
What did I do? I haven't done anything but
smile. How you doing, Mel?
Doing good. How are you?
Amelia the Pitbull Chapman, my producer, my partner in crime.
There you go.
Pain in the ass. I got to deal with everything. Listen, what you got coming up tomorrow night on the wrestling show you do?
Yes, we sure do. We have the Hall of Fame wish list is what we have.
The Hall of Fame wish list. Wrestling Hall of Fame wish list tomorrow night. Mm-hmm. We have, we're supposed to have, ladies and gentlemen, we are supposed to have a returning guest tonight, Ronnie Marmo. Here he is. Hey. Here he is. We're just talking about you. Here he is. I hope Ronnie didn't forget us tonight.
Listen,
how are you, my friend?
I'm good. I'm in Chicago. I'm doing great.
Oh, great. That's fabulous. Yeah. Our returning guest, a special guest. He's a special guy anyway. We like Ronnie. Ronnie Marmo is an actor. He is a producer, author, writer. He's a director. Listen to this one. A theater owner. And if that weren't enough hats to wear, he does TV and movies and stage. And sometimes he sells hot dogs on the street corner.
That's true. That was you.
How you doing, Ron?
I'm good. I guess I sold you two with Kraut last week. Remember Kraut?
Exactly. That's why I smell like shit. Jeez. Ronnie, last time you were here, we talked all things Lenny Bruce and how you became Lenny for that that show you did. We're going to do something a little different tonight. Amelia and I are talking about this. I want to get to know Ronnie Marmo. Mm-hmm. I want to know what it's like to be an actor. I want to know the difference between acting for stage and TV and film and, you know, working with people that you can't stand and you got to smile at them. And, oh, you got a story. I see that face, brother. Oh, boy, did you just tip the bit. Holy crap.
That never happens, Mad Dog. I love everyone.
Yeah, sure you do.
He's like, uh-oh.
Exactly.
So let's talk Chicago. You're in Chi-Town.
I am. I'm here. Really? I'm doing two shows. I'm here doing Bill W. and Dr. Bob, this new show that I'm working on. Bill Wilson. I'm also directing it, but I'm also doing the Lenny Bruce show here. So,
oh, you're doing both. Oh, so Bill W. was the guy that started the AA program.
That's right. That's right.
And I don't know who Dr. Bob is in that equation.
Well, they started it together. They met.
Oh, I got you. Okay.
They created it together.
A doctor and a client, a doctor and a patient?
No. The doctor, Dr. Bob, was a drunk as well, and they met because they were both kind of, they met in this moment where they really needed each other. He just happened to be a doctor.
Gotcha. So, okay. Fabulous. I know a little bit about that AA story. Not a whole lot. I know about Bill W. more so than the good doctor. Yeah. So Ron, you've been here one time previously, and I have to tell you that we've gotten some crazy emails. Amelia, please tell me if I'm lying.
No.
Now, I got to tell you, a lot of the questions we got, how old is Ronnie Marmo? Is Ronnie married? Where does he live? Does he have any kids? And I didn't answer anything, but Ronnie's a friend of mine, and that's all I'm telling you.
And why did he have to leave General Hospital? Why? You know, that's another
one. No, only Amelia is the only one that wants to know why you left General Hospital. He was 4 years old at the time, for crying out loud.
I love General Hospital. Be quiet.
He might have been an embryo. Go ahead, Ron.
I left the show because they killed me off. You know, one day you read the script and you go, oh man, I guess I'm off the show, you know?
Yeah.
So, but you remember, if you watched the show, you know, that was crazy.
Yeah, when they stop sending your scripts, you know.
I know. I was in tears. I was like, oh.
Oh, thank you very much. Yeah, I was in tears too when I had to find the rent money going forward.
Exactly. Exactly. No,
it was cool. It was a great show. You know, it was a great job. And the guy who plays Dante, Dominic, and Lisa, who plays Olivia, they're still like literally family to me. We're so close.
That's wonderful. It's an interesting thing, Ronnie. You know, talking about soap operas. Okay. First of all, I've heard soap actors, and I know a few. I've heard soap actors say they don't like the term soap opera. They prefer daytime drama. Where do you stand on that? Is there like an etiquette involved here?
That's really interesting. That, you know, some of the actors, most actors on the show are fantastic. I mean, in fact, I'm going to go out on a limb and say that was the hardest job I ever had. You really become an actor when you do those shows because mm-hmm. you get 30 pages the day before. So I think this soap opera stigma, I feel like that's a thing of the past. That's not a certain style anymore. There's some really wonderful actors on the show, on all those shows. So yeah, I don't know. It was a job and it was great. It was great.
There was a film I saw years ago with, oh my God, everybody that was anybody was in it. It was Kevin Kline. He played an aging soap opera actor who, I guess the word is subterraneously leaves the dinner theater circuit and is called back into service on a soap opera. And he has, he's got a real hard time adjusting to life in front of a camera. He's used to, you know, projecting now for an audience. And, you know, being larger than life in front of like 12 people, right? Because dinner theaters, like, you're lucky if anybody's paying attention at dinner theater. And I want to find out if you're familiar with the film I'm talking about. And if so, is that something that actors go through? Is there like an adjustment period going from like one form of art to another?
Oh, no doubt. First of all, I don't remember the film, but I could talk on that. You know, listen, I'm a theater guy first and foremost, so I had to learn how to get smaller for film and for television. Mm-hmm. It's a different performance. It's not something some people just have it, but the truth is I'm a very expressive person and theater is my love. And so I had to learn how to make everything smaller, and you know, your performance goes from your hands to your eyes. You know what I mean? I've heard
somebody say that before, Ronnie. You making it smaller. I've got a friend of mine named Jim Fife that's a film actor, does film and television. Most notable, his film was called The Frighteners with Michael J. Fox. Mm. And Jim was the other person, other than yourself, I heard say, making myself smaller. Can you, in lay terms, for somebody like myself, because I'm not familiar with the terminology, tell us what that means in terms of your art, to make yourself smaller.
Yeah, there's a couple of things. One, it could be technical, meaning if I'm doing a play and I need to look down at something, I look down. If I'm doing a movie, I need to look down. My eyes do all the work. There's technical. The other part is making yourself smaller just means you start to know them. For me, when I direct, I use the term make it smaller a lot mm-hmm. with actors. And that just means make the material a bit more digestible and you really start to understand what you're talking about.
Yeah.
Because by the time you watch an actor on TV or in a play or in film, when they're living out a scene for you, when they first read it, they have to like digest and understand what they're talking about. Yeah. Then they have to personalize it. And then they have to find a way to regurgitate it. Yeah. So you feel like they're having that experience.
Yeah.
You know, and so
it's a crazy thing, isn't it? It's to hear you describe that seems like a process in itself.
Yeah, certainly. And that's why there's a thing called good casting. You know, every actor, in my opinion, shouldn't play every role. I think you go through a casting process and you find people who fit the roles. Certainly, I think there's some actors who can stretch.
Yeah.
You know, let's face it, like with this face, not anybody, you know, normally they're trying to give me, I play a lot of cops and gangsters, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, that's just kind of the
way it is.
You've
got a beautiful face, Ron.
Hey, listen, I appreciate that. I'm happily married, so take it easy, all right?
I was asking for Amelia.
Hey, be quiet. No, you were not.
You guys. But yeah, no, it's really, it's definitely an art and something to learn how to do to mm-hmm. perform in the different mediums, you know, so.
Mm-hmm. So there is a film that I saw many years ago. It is still today one of my favorite. It's my go-to movie. Dustin Hoffman is Tootsie. Okay.
Great film.
If any actor, wannabe actor, thinking about being an actor, wants to know what the life in the business is like, watch Tootsie. Ronnie. Yeah. That, in my opinion, I want you to give me your honest on this one. In my opinion, that's the go-to film for any serious wannabe actor.
Well, I haven't seen the movie in 20 years, so I can't mm-hmm. speak about it in a way where I know specifics. But I know that Hoffman is one of our great actors, and he actually played Lenny as well. So
yes, he did. It's funny you say. Yeah.
Yeah, Hoffman's sure one of our did. Great. Yeah, he's incredible and has always been incredible. And so yeah, no, it certainly tells you a little bit about the business and you know, it's a silly business.
The tie in there, Ron, is to the daytime drama, soap operas. He's a serious stage actor, or he thinks he's serious. He takes himself much more seriously than the casting directors and playwrights and directors hiring him. Because he's labeled difficult to work with, okay? Sidney Pollack, who plays his agent, says to him, you know, no one will work with you. You know, you played a tomato and you went 3 days over budget, right? And he says, yes, but it was a beautiful, juicy beefsteak tomato. The point I'm making is a stage actor now... He's looking for work. He's got to find something to do. Happens to be at the right place at the right time. They're looking for an older female for this daytime drama.
Right.
He goes home, throws the makeup on. He comes back. He's Tootsie now, right?
Right.
But now everything he knows, he's got to, like you say, make it smaller. All right. So the gist of the film is, for me... It's quite cognizant of real life in acting with actors. And I know a lot of actors, a lot of good friends of mine who act. Most of them stage actors. But I got a couple of friends that do television and a handful that do film. You're one of the few people that I know that does an equal amount of stage to film. Because largely you're... I won't put words in your mouth, but I think you're largely a film actor. And as far as I'm concerned, you're a film and stage actor rather than a stage and TV actor.
You know, it's interesting. I guess it depends on where I am in my life. But I think I actually, if you had to like make me say one of them, I don't know, man. I guess equally. I would say theater was my first love and still is. It's mm-hmm. the thing I always go back to. I kind of can't let go of. But, mm-hmm. you know, if you want to make a living in showbiz, it's hard to do it in theater. It's a tough racket.
So, well, yeah, you got to work, you know.
Yeah, so, but film I love, and I love it for many different reasons. But what I love about theater the most, I think, that trumps everything is that there's an immediate response. You shoot a movie, you don't know how an audience feels about it for a year. But you do a You know, the audience is in the room with you right here, right now, and you get an immediate response to what you're doing. And
exactly.
So I love that energy. That's great. You know,
I would love for you to come back east so I can actually like see you perform. Amelia.
Yes. Where are you back east? Where are you guys?
Amelia, she's in Florida. Oh. I'm in New Jersey. Mm-hmm. I'm not far from Atlantic City.
Okay, because I think I'm going to be playing New Jersey I'm accepting an offer to do Lenny in what's the name of town? Where am I doing New Jersey? Homedale, New Jersey. Like kind of south. Yeah, and I'm playing it's August 2nd and 3rd, I think. It's the August 3rd is the anniversary of Lenny's death, and I think I'm going to be in New Jersey. So
You're killing me, Ronnie. You're killing me. I'm going to be in Wildwood, New Jersey on vacation. That's about an hour and a half from Homedale. I know where Homedale is. It's about an hour and a half from the shore.
Listen, people have driven further than an hour and a half to see my work, pal.
There you go. You see, that's that excuse now. Come
on. Yes, but Mrs. DeCipio doesn't travel well.
I understand.
Amelia, questions for Ron Marmo. Yeah,
as far as you were saying that you like theater, but I think I could still see you doing like maybe a Lifetime movie. I know you said a cop or a detective, but I think it could be like a dad, maybe a role, you know, like maybe like a missing child or some kind of like something like that, like a really devoted kind of movie. What do you think?
Yeah, I think it'd be great. Mm-hmm. I mean, listen. I love telling stories, and I'm certainly a dad, so I know how to play a dad, and I love it. So, yeah, I could totally see that happening, and maybe you should be my agent. I could get a little more work.
Yeah, we need to hire him immediately for Lifetime movies.
That's right. I did a Lifetime movie, actually, a couple of years back. It was a cool experience. I forgot what the name of it was, but it was really fun, and a lot of people watch those Lifetime movies. I was surprised.
Yes, I do.
Surprised how many people reached out. You know,
questions, Amelia.
Yes. Also, and as far as like reprising a role, like recently I just watched the new movie Roadhouse, but I also heard that they want to redo Ghost with Channing Tatum. What do you think about so reprising a movie with somebody with a new actor?
You know, I usually feel like once a movie's done, they should leave it there, you know. But here's the problem. As a writer, I really believe there's only like 7 stories in the world. So it's like they just, you know, they change the ethnic background. They change the situation. If you looked at the formula of these movies, you probably, if you were looking at it with a certain eye, you could go, oh, I see. I've seen that movie over and over and over. Mm-hmm. Different background of people. A different location where it's set, but the same story, same premise. So, you know, I understand why they remake movies, but usually when they do it again, it's usually not as successful.
I'm with you on that, Ron. I'm not a big fan of remakes or reboots. Mm-hmm. You know, like after Rocky 17, leave it alone, okay? Will you?
Right.
Like that's enough.
I know. I do like what's the show that they just had that's coming back? Oh, I'm blank. But they were showing everybody all these years later. I am interested. Oh, well, basically Karate Kid.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
That's a good one.
I did like Cobra Kai because it's like sometimes when you fall in love with actors and characters, you go, "What happened to those people?" You know, you want to know. And so I thought Cobra Kai was awesome.
Let's talk about this here. Chronicles of a Serial Killer. I actually saw it yesterday.
Oh.
And I want to talk to you about this. How do you get into, I don't know if you get into somebody's, how do you let a character get into your head, which would be the better question to ask an actor? How do you allow your mind to accept it?
Chronicles of a Serial Killer. I was in that, right?
Yeah, you were.
I remember. How do I accept it?
Where does your head have to go?
I guess it really depends on the character. I mean, if it's something that's really close to home or something a little lighter, then it's easier. But if it's like a darker situation, then I might have to dig a little deep. It's a fine line between being so engulfed, immersed with what you're playing, where you kind of lose yourself. It's a balance, you know? And so it's hard to say, but with like Lenny Bruce, for instance, that's a really big performance. I mean, it's a 90-minute monologue, and I take you back to the 60s, and this guy was, you know, a brilliant mind. He was a great comic. He was a satirist. He was a junkie. He was all these things. And so when you do that, you have to show up and just kind of turn your heart over to that. And, you know, it kind of depends on the role. It would have to be specific. But to play one thing I know is, like, when you play crazy, you can't act crazy because crazy people don't think they're crazy.
Oh, man. Mm-hmm. Did you just open the floodgates? Oh, shit. Okay.
You know what I mean?
Let's go there. Yeah. Let's go there. That's you mentioned two things that are like, I could ask you for the next 2 hours questions. Okay. First one, losing yourself in a character. Okay. It's now legendary. It's the story of folklore now. Jim Carrey, completely losing Jim Carrey to become Andy Kaufman. The point where he wouldn't speak as Jim. He wouldn't engage as Jim at 24 hours a day, 7 days a week for 9 months. He was Andy Kaufman. Okay. Pre-production, production, and post-production. He was nothing short of a monster, a nuisance to Milos Forman, to the point where, you know, this great director, Milos Forman, wanted to quit the film because his lead actor had gone, you know, batshit crazy for a little while.
Yeah.
Is there a fine line there, Ron, between genius and insanity? And when do you, as an actor, know you've crossed the line?
Well, every actor has their own line. So I couldn't speak on Jim's behalf. I mean, maybe he saw that that's what he had to do to get there, to give the most honest, authentic performance. You know, when I first took on Lenny, because that's the best way to explain it, because that's probably the biggest departure for me. I don't speak like Lenny Bruce. Lenny talks like this, man. He's groovy, baby. You know, it's all that.
Right? Exactly.
So I took that on for a few months myself and kind of spoke that way and kind of lived in his shoes and walked and talked like him. So by the time I performed it, it wasn't acting. It was just a continuation of living. Okay. I already have trouble with the word acting. I think we should not be watching acting. Nobody wants to see acting. We want to see living. We want to see being, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I already think. I already think the words are
brilliant.
Yeah. So do you know the name? You know, I teach a weekly acting class on Zoom. And do you know the name of my class?
No.
Okay. Am I allowed to curse on TV here?
Yes.
Of course. Yes.
You've got free rein on this program. Yes.
So the name of my class is Stop Fucking Acting. And because nobody wants to watch acting. And so when you tell me Jim Carrey took those kinds of choices to go that far, I go, well, maybe he saw it as fit. And, you know, he gave an incredible performance, didn't he?
Now, again, I'm like, I don't have to do anything. You're opening the door for me.
Mm-hmm.
Chorus Line, one of the great stage productions of all time. About a chorus line of actors and dancers trying to get a shot on Broadway. In the film version, Michael Douglas, you know, pronouncedly says, stop acting. They didn't know how to stop act. They didn't know how to not act. How do you, I'm asking an actor, how do you not act? You know, so how do you not act? When you're in that position where your whole livelihood depends upon you being able to act.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, it's an interesting conversation. I mean, the way I like work with actors as a director or as a teacher is that I really emphasize that you have to find where this character, this story, this situation lives within you, because then you can find a truthful way to kind of, you know, kind of bring. So I feel like if you don't find like for instance, when I first started doing Lenny about 6 years ago, my show,
right,
there are things we disagreed about, but my heart doesn't know that I'm acting. So 6 years later, 440 performances later, I couldn't tell you what those things are anymore, because while I was on stage fighting for Lenny, I fell in love with his mission. I don't know anymore what we disagree with. In fact, I don't think we do anymore. So you have to find that within you in order to be honest and authentic.
Yeah.
Because once you spot acting, it's not a good thing.
Is there, Ron, is there a pronounced difference between working for the big screen as opposed to the smaller screen? And in addition to the clear, you know, dynamics of, you know, one is larger than life and one you could literally hold in your hand at times. Are the aside from the obvious mechanism, is there a difference in how you bring your character to light?
Yeah, for sure. So, for instance, when I'm doing film, I make sure that I am very aware of what lenses they're using, what camera they're shooting. Not every actor does that, but I do this. So then I can say to the DP, hey, what lens are you on? So then I know how wide the shot is, and then I know how small I have to be. And so I like that. And what that does is that impresses the DP, the director of photography, and sometimes annoys the director. But the thing is like, if you're that educated, then you could give the best performance you can. And so for film, sometimes you shoot really wide, and it's almost like a play. You know, it's like you have all the freedom in the world to move around and, but if you know the dealing with, then I think that makes you a more capable actor, because then you understand how small you got to create things. And in TV, you generally are playing from the neck up. That's kind of the general rule. If you go watch a TV show that you love, they start in a medium shot around your waist, and then they end up close up.
Yeah.
So on General Hospital, you know, we used to say, because it was five cameras at one time, five camera shoot at one time, it was the closest thing you get to theater, because you could just live it out as you want, and you know the camera's going to find you.
Exactly.
It wasn't like one in a film, they have one camera usually, and it's in your face. But in General Hospital or television or sitcoms, the cameras are back, and there's four or five, and you just live it out, and they'll find you.
I heard actor Michael Caine speaking to an acting class in England, and he said something interesting. I didn't understand what he meant when he said it, but then he demonstrated it. And I want to hit you with this question. The idea of, he said, never play to the close-up. Do you understand what that means, right?
Yeah.
Explain to everybody what it means, you know, never play to the close-up, and how can that be detrimental? How can that ruin the scene, Ron?
Well, I didn't hear him say it, so I don't know what his interpretation was, but when you say that, what I think of is the best way I can answer it is, because, you know, I could be taking it out of context, but what I think he's saying is, don't save it just for the close-up, because then you're missing an opportunity. There are a lot of actors who believe, like, hey, just, you know, save it for the close-up. The way I see it is, first you do a master shot, which is usually in a master shot, for those who don't know, it's an establishing shot of the location. It's kind of a wide shot. You go, okay, now I know where we are. And then you go in a little tighter, and then maybe a medium, and then a close, right? So you usually go in a couple of sizes. A lot of actors wait for the close-up, because then they know you're going to use the close-up, because that's the best performance.
That was precisely what he was talking about.
Yeah.
So precisely what is, and he demonstrated it by literally having the cameraman, like, swallow his face, essentially. And all you saw was the entire screen filled up with his face. And it's hard to escape that.
Because that's every movie star wants to have a close-up on the big screen. I mean, it's just the way it is. But I think if you're an actor, I think the challenge is to use the wide shot, use the medium shot as rehearsal, because the truth is you might find your magic within those shots. So by the time you get to the close-up, you're just on fire and you're cooking. But don't just wait for the close-up, because I think you miss an opportunity to really find what the scene's about, you know?
You explained perfectly what he was demonstrating.
Oh, good. Okay.
Perfect. Yeah, because that's essentially what he was saying is, you know, don't lose yourself in that close-up. You know, don't waste it. You can, most of the time, from what I see, when I see a close-up in a film, it's it triggers the "oh shit, here it comes" moment to me. Like, you know, the dread. It's like, oh, yeah, now I got to look at this guy's face or this woman's face. Yeah. I want to see what's going on in the background. I want to see what's happening in the room.
You know,
were one frame, Ronnie, like if there was just a wide shot for the whole movie, I'd be a happy camper.
Yeah. Well,
that's just me.
Yeah, yeah. Here's the bottom line. I mean, in this day and age, all they do is edit the film together. They don't really have actors. They don't have actors in a two-shot behaving with each other. And that sucks. You know, it's like, yeah. It's like I rather see the scene live out in a bit of a wider shot so actors can talk and behave. And every time you see a cut, because that's how the new generation thinks. They think edit, as opposed to like put a camera. That's why movies like, there were some great films like Serpico and all these great films that wouldn't hold up today because, you know, they sit in a scene probably a minute too long, but you're watching these actors behave and it's beautiful. Mm-hmm. And you know, they get away from that now and everybody wants to edit and cut, you know?
And that's, well, let's talk about that. That's another thing I'm not a big fan of. Mm-hmm. I understand why editing is necessary in film. Absolutely. It's critical. It can make or break a film. Right. But by the same token, it can make or break a performance as well. It can take a good actor. It can take a Ronnie Marmo and make you look like shit, or it can make you look brilliant, depending on what kind of mood that editor's in.
An editor is a big part of the process, unfortunately. I mean, it could be great, too. I mean, there's some great editors. I've seen editors take a movie that is not great and make it really wonderful. So that's possible. But they also have the power if they get excited about, because, you know, here's the disconnect, right? When you're making a movie, let's say I have an idea. Let's start with an idea. Right. I have an idea. Okay. So I have this idea to make a movie. Then I go, okay, here's the idea. Now I'm going to write it. So then I write it. So then it's different than the idea. And then after I write it, I go, okay, now I need a director to help me bring it to life. Now he has a different idea. Yeah. And so he's going to take his idea. Then we go get actors and we go, okay, so now they have an interpretation. Okay. Yeah. Then we have actors. Then we get on set and the DP, the director of photography, he has an interpretation of how the movie should look. And so then we have that. So these are all the same idea that keeps evolving. And then we shoot it, right? And then you take it home and you give it to an editor. And then they have an idea. It could be completely different than what my performance was leading towards. They may miss it. Then you put music to it. The music supervisor has an idea. And then the color correction, they have an idea. And then by the time you get to the finished product, it's gone on this journey. And all you can do is hope that everybody was on as close to the same page as possible. And I've seen a lot of great movies get ruined, and I've seen a lot of okay movies turn out really good because it somehow worked out. So it's a bit of a crapshoot, and that's why a lot of people want to hold control of their film, because at least they go, well, if it sucks, it's my fault, and because I saw it all the way through, rather than it sucks because nobody else understood what I was trying to do.
Exactly. Ron, Amelia and I were talking before the show. She said, I'm going to ask him. So now this is your chance, Amelia.
What?
I'm going to ask him if there's anybody he worked with that he really just couldn't stand. Go ahead.
That anyone that he couldn't stand?
Here he is.
Yeah. I have a feeling that wasn't Amelia that wanted to know that.
No. Tell the truth.
I have a feeling. Yeah, you're crossing your toes and your legs down there.
Not me, baby.
No, you know what the truth is? It's like any job, you know? It's like you find people and you hope you gel with everybody. I mean, look, you do your best to be a gentleman. And you know, I've certainly had big kissing scenes with people who drove me up a friggin' wall and I didn't want to. But like, you know, you figure out a way, you find something in them that you go, okay. You know, you know, it's an interesting journey to be with people who, you know, I also am at a point in my life, and I don't want to sound too, like, I don't want this to be arrogant, but I'm at a point in my life where, like, if somebody's driving me too crazy and I'm actually in charge, I just don't deal with them. I just move on. Like,
stop. You're driving me crazy.
Well, even more so, I just replace them. I mean, I just
find there you go.
Well, how the start it was, you know, Amelia said, you know, George Clooney said that Michelle Pfeiffer was a lousy kisser. So, go ahead and ask Ron.
Yeah.
If there's anybody that he couldn't stand. Well, your questions are up anyway, so go ahead, Amelia.
Has there been a line that was deleted from a scene that you wish that they would have left?
Hundreds.
Really? Hundreds.
Oh, yeah. All the time. Yeah. And you can't control that, you know? Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, I've been almost completely cut out of movies, mm-hmm. like my character. And early in my career, I was heartbroken. Now, as a filmmaker, I understand, like, my character just didn't push the story forward and didn't matter. Mm-hmm. It wasn't necessary. But I didn't know that 20 years ago. And so it's a hell of a journey when you're in that situation. You learn the hard way. But certainly that has happened many, many times. Yeah.
Amelia and I just had a friend that scored a part in a new major feature called Cabrini. The guy's a dear friend of ours from the show, Brian Saponis. He's got a small part, but he says, you know, I may end up on the cutting room floor, mm-hmm. Mad Dog, but, you know, fingers crossed and, you know, and God willing, maybe I'll make it in. Well, they kept his entire character in the film. And he's in the film Cabrini. He said, for what I had to go through, for what they put me through, I'd do it all over again for free.
Yeah.
It's amazing just to have that 6 minutes on screen.
Well, if there's any actors watching, you know, there's a little piece of advice I can offer, and it came from a broken heart that I had. I was really early in my career, and I was asked to be in Crocodile Dundee in LA, the last one. And it was nice. They just offered me this part, and it was great. And so I did it for a week. I was on it for a week. I shot a lot of scenes. I shot scenes with Mike Tyson. I shot scenes with George Hamilton, and also Paul Hogan and Mick Dundee. All those actors. I was so excited to be working with these guys, and they paid me really good money. And then I went to the premiere. I couldn't wait to go to the premiere. And when I went there, I was pretty much cut out of the film. And I was heartbroken, and I was like so embarrassed, and I was devastated, and I was like, oh my God. And I didn't know about filmmaking then. I just wanted to be an actor. And so what I learned from that experience was, and that I've taken with me to the best of my ability, I'm still human, but what I learned was, is that the experience I have on set shooting with the people, that's where it ends for me. Unless I'm the director, I can't control what. And so I genuinely, like, it's the relationships I make on set. It's the time I have with the other actors. It's the director. It's just the relationships and connections and making movies together. That's where the love is for me. But when I walk off set, that's the end of it. I no longer could have an expectation because I'll set myself up for a disappointment. And so unless I'm in charge, if I'm the boss, then I can kind of control what happens. But if I'm not the boss, I got to go. Thank you for the opportunity. I hope it turns out okay.
Yeah. You know? Well, you know, it's funny. The first thing I said to my friend Brian was, did the check clear? He said, yeah. I said, then fuck it. Don't worry about it.
You know, I know, but as an actor, you're dying to see yourself on screen. When I did Crocodile Dundee, I'll never forget the first residual that came to me. Mm-hmm. It was the biggest residual I'd ever gotten at the time. And I couldn't believe they sent me so much money. It was, you know,
And basically cut you out of the movie, Ron?
Cut me out of the movie, and they sent me, like, you know, I think it was like 15 grand or something in a two PO box. So I called them because I felt terrible. I was like, clearly there's a mistake. And I'm like, I can't take your money. They're like, no, that's for you. I'm like, oh, that's my money. And they're like, yeah, it's your money. And you know, it's funny. I got a residual last week still from Crocodile Dundee. It was like 30 cents or something. So they're still coming. 30 cents.
Yeah. Did they send you money, Ron, as long as it keeps showing somewhere?
Yeah, but I've gotten residuals for a penny at this point. I'm like, don't waste the stamps, you know?
Yeah, it's not worth, you know, it costs you more to print the check.
No, there's no doubt, but I'm grateful. You know, in the industry, I like to call that mailbox money. Whenever I go to my mailbox and there's money, I'm excited. I'm like, hey, free money. Where did this come from?
Yeah, exactly, right? Amelia, questions for Ronnie Marmo.
Yeah. And also, you know, I love the way you had started your company, the 68 cents. how you had just looked in your pocket and I was like, okay, well, 68 cents here. And I'm like, that's how we're going to tell everyone how that started.
Well, yeah, I was in a couple of acting classes in LA and they weren't going well. Not that I don't think acting class is important. I clearly think it's important, but that doesn't mean every class is supposed to be your class. You know, I even tell that to my students. I'm like, look, I might not be your teacher. Make sure I speak your language. Let's make sure. Anyway, I went to a couple of classes, wasn't going well. And I had 68 cents left in my bank account. I remember turning to my friend Tommy and saying, you know, we should start like a theater company. Let's get people, let's stop going to class. Instead, let's have people come over on Monday nights. We'll do scene work. We'll help each other out. We'll keep each other accountable. And that's what happened. So 68 cents went on to kind of represent what I was willing to have or not have in order to pursue the thing I love. Because I could have gotten a job and just called it a day, but I was like, no, I don't want a job. I want to do this. And so, So Theater 68 is now, you know, 23 years old in LA. We're 12 years old in New York. And
yeah, you got to tell everybody about the New York location and the Los Angeles theater run.
Well, in LA, we've got a beautiful, we've got a complex, an arts complex. Mm. We have three theaters. And in New York, we have two, and it's right in Midtown. And we're just really lucky, you know, we have all these beautiful things. And now I'm really putting down roots here in Chicago for the theater company. Theater 68 is producing both shows here. And so I wouldn't be too surprised if a Chicago chapter of Theater 68 opens here soon.
Wow.
Wow, yeah. Beautiful. I'll tell you what, we are going to take a small break and pay a bill or two. We are returning momentarily, folks, with actor Ronnie Marmo right after this.
Do you have sweaty balls or volleyball netty balls? It's time to make them ready balls. The Manscaped.com Lawnmower 3.0 will do the job and clean your knob with its patented no-nick head so your head will function as desired. Enter promo code WrestlingFuture for a generous 20% discount. That's enter WrestlingFuture for a 20% discount. Manscaped.com and Wrestling with the Future, going balls to the walls with Manscaped.com and the Lawnmower 3.0, your balls will thank you. And so will we.
What's the buzz? America's best podcast on the WWTF Radio Network broadband radio system, broadcasting live globally daily around the world. Amelia, tomorrow, who's coming on the show?
We have actually a guest of Lou Ferranti coming on the show to talk to us with a wrestling show. Excuse me, I have to excuse
no,
me.
No, I think you got your guest confused. From
sorry. Lou Marconi, sorry. I'm just getting over a cold.
The Hall wrong of Lou. Fame
wish list.
Hall of Fame wish list. Lou. Okay, good.
Lou Marconi this time. Yeah, we have a Hall of Fame wish list. Who do you wish should be on the Hall of Fame?
WWE Hall of Fame wish list is what she's trying to say, folks.
Yep.
You got to forgive her. She hit the sauce before we went on the air.
No, I did not.
And I this is what happens when Amelia gets happy.
Oh, be quiet. I'm just, I got an actor in front of me. Be quiet.
You're right.
There One of my go. Favorite actors from General Hospital. Be quiet.
There you go. Our one-stop shop, folks, is Linktree.com. Anything and everything you need to know about What's the Buzz, America's Best Podcast, on Linktree.com/WWTF Radio. We are there. And I am the Mad Dog for WWTF Radio, broadcasting live and around the world with nearly 12 million subscribers globally. And we thank you for that, and thank you, Manscaped and Pepsi. Amelia, you are up for your next round of questioning. By the way, it looks like you're going to have the final round of questioning.
Go for it. Also, you have some books that you also have written and published as well.
Me?
Yes.
Me? No, I haven't published any books. I have a book that I do. There's an audio book that I've recorded. Uh-huh. But all I'm doing is I'm reading Lenny Bruce's autobiography as Lenny. It's called How to Talk Dirty and Influence People. It's cool. Book. It's out on Audible. So if you like audiobooks, check that out. I'm the voice of it. It's funny you mention that though, because I've been tinkering with an idea. I want to write a book, a memoir, and I've been thinking about it quite a bit lately. So maybe you're putting it out there for me, you know.
Yes.
You want to do a memoir at this point? Mm-hmm. You're a baby. It's just a kid.
Yeah, but you know, listen.
Old people write memoirs, right?
No, he has done a lot of film, movies, acting. So yeah,
I've had an interesting life, even outside of showbiz. But but you know, I did write an op-ed. If you guys get a chance, Google my name and op-ed. I wrote an op-ed on cancel culture and what I think we should be doing about that. And when in relationship,
you should say that we have a show coming on.
Well, I wrote an op-ed. Look it up. Google it. There, it was picked up nationally. It was syndicated.
Yeah.
And basically, it's basically me asking comedy clubs to stand up and reclaim their positions as free speech zones.
Yes.
It's not.
Yeah. Actually, we have coming on the show. It's funny that we're talking about this. Mm-hmm. We have coming on the show one of the country's foremost free speech, First Amendment rights attorneys, who happens to be my lawyer, Joe Cohn.
Yeah.
Oh, that's amazing. So a dear friend of mine, his name is Bob Corn Revere. Look up Bob Revere. Bob Corn
I know
Revere.
Exactly who he is. Yeah.
Yeah. He wrote the pardon, that pardon Lenny, the first posthumous pardon in New York history. He's become a pal. In fact, we did a radio interview this morning together, and he's a wonderful guy. And, you know, First Amendment is very important, you know.
Yes, sir. Oh, absolutely. We live and die by it here. Mm-hmm. Go ahead, Amelia.
Yes, absolutely. Because, you know, like you were saying, you know, First Amendment is like the best thing. And also, I'm so glad that you're, you know, reliving, you know, Lenny Bruce, because that way everybody could know where comedy actually came from. And people like Andrew Dice Clay and Sam, you know, Sam Kinison, were actually who they are today because of him.
Oh, no doubt. I mean, everybody from Richard Pryor, George Carlin, all the way down to, you know, Chappelle or any of these guys.
Before Lenny, there was nothing really.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, there were guys like Red Fox, and there were great guys doing blue material. But Lenny was like the first guy who kind of took it mainstream, and he was the first.
The whole thing is funny. You mentioned Red Fox and guys like Mort Saul used to do what they call blue humor. But it was, you know, it was under the table. It was hidden. Lenny was the first guy, and I think you acknowledged this previously on the show, the first guy that really stepped out in, you know, into the limelight and opened up, you know, middle America to what was going on in the blue rooms around the world.
Yeah, no doubt. No doubt. He was the first like mainstream guy to do it. Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you what, my friend, you have been and are always an amazing guest on the show. I know you've got a lot to do. I know you came here right from your work. I'm going to let you go now to bring you up here and say thank you. You are a welcome guest anytime you want to come back.
Thank you.
Our audience loves you. We like you here. And Amelia?
Yes, thank you so much.
There he is. Your heartthrob from General Hospital.
Yes, he is right there.
There he is.
Too much. It's too much. All right. Thank you. Hey, listen, thanks for having me on.
Thank you so kindly. And tell Janelle, thank you very much for putting up with my craziness.
You got it. Onward we go. I'll see you guys again soon.
You bet. Take care, Ron.
Thank you so much.
Bye. Okay. There you go. Ronnie Marmo. Great actor.
Yes.
He really, really is. He's an amazing guy. He's done film and stage and television. And think about what he said. He took 68 cents that was in his pocket, in his bank account, excuse me, 68 cents in his bank account and rolled the dice on it.
Yes.
And look at him now. Yep. Now he's got two theaters, one on each coast.
And about to probably open another one in Chicago.
And three in L.A. and two in New York. Okay? Mm-hmm. That's remarkable. That's remarkable. Tomorrow night, independent pro wrestler, Lou Marconi will join us on the show and give his two cents in our program called the WWE Hall of Fame Wish List.
Yeah.
Who should be in the hall?
Mm-hmm.
Who do you want to put in the hall? Who's the next guy to go in?
Yeah.
Like, you say, well, they got plenty of people in the Hall of Fame. Well, guess what?
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of people in that Hall of Fame that don't deserve to be there, but
exactly.
We're the ones picking. Okay. We're the ones picking. So I say, if we're going to pick them, let's pick them right.
Yeah.
So we're going to pick them tomorrow night.
Yeah.
Our wish list. Who do you think should be in?
You want to say right now instead of waiting?
I mean, no, just give me like a one or two off of your list.
I'm going to say Rick Martel is going to be one of them for me.
Guess what? You know what's funny?
Hmm.
He's on my list.
Really?
He is.
Mm-hmm.
Rick the Model Martel?
Yeah.
I'll tell you who else should be in.
Yeah.
You're going to laugh when you find out, right? Ready for this one?
Mm-hmm.
Let me ask you a question.
What?
Do you think The Rock is in the Hall of Fame?
I don't think he is.
He's not.
No.
I'll tell you who else is not in the Hall of Fame.
Cool.
Miss Elizabeth.
Yeah, exactly. And I think it's Hacksaw Jim Duggan is not on the list.
Well, Hacksaw Jim Duggan can stay off the list as far as I'm concerned.
Really?
That prick. I had personal dealings with Jim Duggan.
Oh.
And he's a mean-spirited guy. Okay? He's a mean-spirited guy. Mm-hmm. And that's all I'm going to say.
Hmm.
But, I mean, I have a list right here. 2.5 pages long that I made a list, 2.5 pages long of people that I think should be in the Hall of Fame that are not in there.
Mm-hmm.
Here's what we got to do. You know what we should do?
Mm-hmm.
If you take all the celebrities
off
out of the Hall of Fame, mm-hmm. if you take the politicians out of the Hall of Fame, take the comedians out of the Hall of Fame, you know what you're going to have left? About four people. That's mm-hmm. it. Okay.
Yeah. And I think, isn't The Rock's mother nominated for the list?
She is. The Rock's grandmother.
She
not his mother, his grandmother.
She wasn't even a wrestler.
No, but I got to defend that one. I'll tell you why. Because Mrs. Maivia ran wrestling in Hawaii after Peter Maivia passed away. And she made it a multi-million dollar business in Hawaii. That woman had some cojones.
Huh.
You know?
Then you know what? Do you know what the argument is going to be for the ladies of GLOW Wrestling?
Oh, don't even get me started with GLOW. Oh,
because Sylvester Stallone's mother in that one.
You know, let me tell you something. God rest her soul. Jackie Stallone. You know, here... Folks, don't get me started, folks. Oh, Lord. Amelia, see, she does this to me, ladies and gentlemen. She does this to me every time.
There's a head and a tail and a coin, so I have to give you both sides of the coin. You know that.
You don't have to. You want to aggravate me. That's why you do it. She knows what she's not stupid, this woman. She's very smart. She knows what she's doing. She knows how to get under my skin and aggravate me. Then my wife says, stop picking on Amelia. Okay? Anyway.
She's probably the one telling me to aggravate you, know?
I'm asking you a question about the show, you pain in the ass. Hey, what do you got going on this week? Right?
No.
What do you got going on? What's on the schedule? What's coming up?
April the 1st. We'll go start Monday, which is the next following week. We have Rick Sapphire, the entertainment manager of the stars, as I'm going to call him.
And who has he managed?
Quite a lot of people.
A lot more people than Stephen Plym.
Yes.
I love you, Stephen, but let's be honest about it. Tim wasn't going to cut it, baby.
No.
No, I'll tell you what. Now, Stephen Plym had quite a few people.
Yeah, he did. He's a great person. I'll give him that.
You know what it was, though? I mean, it was a different kind of clientele. It was a different day.
It was a different era back then than what he had, from what this guy has. So
we got, here's what we got going on, folks. We got April 1st, as she said, Rick Sapphire will be here on Tuesday, April the 2nd. Bobby Candle will be here with his tribute to the Rat Pack.
Yes.
Yeah, we love that.
Dean Martin, and, Sammy Davis Jr., Frank Sinatra.
Oh, yeah. We got a special show, and I want to tell everybody about this. Now, you've heard some crazy Elvis Presley stories on this show.
Mm-hmm.
I've got the craziest by far. Check this out. I have a guest coming on the show. His name is Kenny Presley. Okay? That's his name. Can't make it up. His name is Kenny Presley. But look him up. You think I'm kidding. Go Google
it. Legally, Kenny Presley.
Kenny Presley. Okay? He says, here comes drum roll. He says, his father is Elvis Presley. That's what he says. And wait a minute. Gets better. He says he can prove it. He says he's got DNA to prove it. Well, so does another guy. His name's Elvis Presley Jr. Here's the scary part. The court agreed with him. That's the scary part. Are you kidding me? Now, going to be a very interesting conversation because everybody knows I'm a big Elvis fan.
Yes.
Everybody on this show knows Amelia's husband, Jeff, worked at Graceland. She worked for Elvis Presley Enterprises.
Yes.
So now, I think we know Elvis a little better than a lot of people do around here. Okay? And so, Kenny Presley, he has cojones, though. He's coming on. He's coming on. He knows he's walking into the lion's den. Okay? It's going to be an interesting show. What else we got? Here's what else we got.
Yes, on the 8th of April, we have Jeffrey Epstein.
Epstein didn't kill himself. Part one. Tell everybody about that. What are we doing? Jeffrey Epstein didn't kill himself.
We have, people wanted to hear that again, so we're going to be bringing that again to talk about. Well,
every time you turn around, Amelia, there's something else coming out about Jeffrey Epstein.
Yeah, well, more and more stuff.
That was part one.
Yeah.
That's part one on April the 8th.
Yes.
On April the 9th, we've got Rita Gigante. Now, who's Rita Gigante? Rita is the daughter of Vincent the Chin Gigante, the mob boss who ruled New York back in the 50s and 60s.
Mm-hmm.
He was a made guy in Cosa Nostra. And, you know, you just have to hear her story to believe it. It's just one of them you have to be here stories. And joining us on April the 10th, Gino DiPiero from HamiltonRadio.net here in New Jersey will be joining us. And we're going to talk shop. We're going to talk radio, the past of radio, the future of radio. And well, what the hell? We may end up even working together at some point.
You never know.
You never know. And that's all I'll give you for now, folks, because you know, because I got Amelia here, and she's, if I get started, she'll never shut up, and we'll never get home tonight.
Be quiet.
Anyway.
And so then we got some exciting cases that we're going to be doing at the end of the month, is all I'm going to say.
Really? You got something going on?
Yes, we got some exciting cases we're going to be talking about.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Do I know about them?
Yes, you do. They involve... Okay. Some cases in Georgia is all I'm going
to
tell
you. I love when she does this. Like I'm supposed to know what's going on. I have no idea what she's talking about because she does this to me all the time. Okay. Four. Amelia the Pitbull Chapman. I am a very confused Mad Dog DiCiprio. We will see you tomorrow night on Wrestling with the Future. Good night, everybody. Take care. We'll see
Good
you tomorrow night,
everyone.
God willing, and the creek don't rise. Bye-bye. Go home. What are you still doing here? Go home.